the future does not exist.
Hello, dear earlobes. This is The Future Does Not Exist, a podcast about memory and whatever else we can kind of conjure up from our thoughts. This is me, Damien Leslie.
And it's me, Marcel van Schoten.
And it is just the two of us today. And today we, well, it's an apt kind of topic because in this beautiful kind of autumn morning, which feels more like a summer's morning. We're kind of clinging on to this Indian summer at the moment.
Yeah.
But as I stepped out of Leiden station this morning,
something has changed.
Dark carnival has arrived.
Yes.
It's building up. There are cuddly toys all over the place and neon lights and caravans and lots of smoking, shifty looking men. Lining the streets, putting cables around, and yes, the fair has come to town. Yes. It is it the first today or is it the 30th?
It's the 30th.
We're in the last day of September, and yep. Leiden is building up for its annual fair, which is 3 October.
Yes.
And I think, Marcel, you should give us a little history lesson as to why the Dark Carnival arrives each year.
Yes, because I'm a very non-Leiden person.
Yes. You're more of a Leiden person than me.
Yeah, of course. But in this case, we're both like imported people enjoying the
festivities.
The festivities going around. There was this thing when we were invaded by Spanish people. They were horrible. They tried to kick us down.
1600s, I think, is it?
Yes, and now you hear the wee part in me as well.
Yes.
I'm joining in this celebration of wee. It happens a lot with the Dutch people. If we're doing well, it's a wee.
Yes.
If we're doing bad, it's a them.
Yes.
Now, the city was surrounded by Spanish people. They tried to take over the city, tried to learn us Spanish. But we didn't do that. We closed the gates of Leiden, and we didn't figure out much thing about food, because after a couple of days we sort of ran out. we starved, almost starved to death. Our mayor even offered us his hand to the people as a symbol of "I believe in you."
Oh, yeah, I've never heard that part.
Yeah, it's a weird thing.
Wow.
But then guys came over with boats, and they had bread and fish. And somewhere around the station, they found a big pan of what is it? Carrots and onions, which they thought it was the best thing in the world. And if you're starving for 2 weeks, I can imagine that.
Nothing wrong with carrots and onions.
Carrots and onions, old bread and fish.
Sounds like my kind of meal.
It probably sounded amazing.
Yeah.
Then the Spanish decided to leave. We're not speaking Spanish. At least we know some words. We still know the word cerveza and stuff. Mm-hmm. And we still know how to get to the Costa Brava. So maybe they actually got the best deal. Yes. Because we voluntarily go there and spend our money there.
Yeah, and they keep the weather.
Yeah, and they don't have to deal with us every day.
Mm-hmm.
So to celebrate that occasion of being barely saved by other people.
So is it a liberation, or was it like a siege that was unsuccessful?
No, it was a liberation, because they actually brought the bread and the fish, but they also had a fight with the Spanish, and the Spanish were probably like, oh, couldn't be bothered.
Mm. Okay, there was a bit of a kerfuffle, and then the Spanish fucked off back to wherever they came from.
I guess
from.
If you ask the Leiden person from that base, it was a very heroic fight.
Yes.
And if you talk to the Spanish, they're like, yeah.
Were they armed with carrots?
Hmm?
Were they armed with carrots in the fight?
Probably not, because they probably ate it all.
Yeah, okay. Interesting. So, to celebrate this momentous event that we both know very little about.
Yes.
Leiden has a big festival each year.
And it turns into the proper, like, village annual celebration thing.
Yeah.
With too much beers, too much bad food, lots of lights. Carnival rides that are way, way, way too expensive.
Yeah.
And
but it
mixed in with a little bit of tradition that we are very proud of as Dutch people, you know that. And yeah.
So there's a kind of local tradition in each town, particularly in the Bollestreep, but I think it's everywhere.
Yeah, I think it's everywhere.
But the timings are very, like, it's always like the end of summer into autumn. In the Bollestreep,
I think it's connected. I think for most of them, it's sort of connected to harvesting time, I guess. Yeah.
Okay. I know sometimes up at Groningen and stuff, it's like February, March or something, because they're just a bit, they just live in a different planet to the rest of us. but there's, you can kind of feel it encroaching towards, it's like all roads lead to Leiden in October, because, like, especially in the Bollestreep, so you've got, like, I think Sassenheim's first. Mm-hmm. Then Voorhout has theirs.
Yeah.
Noordwijkerhout has theirs. I'm not sure if that's...
I think it's around the same time. It's,
yeah.
And it has already been done.
And then it goes up. Then it goes kind of around the corner to Hillegom.
Yeah.
And then it comes down to Lisse.
Yeah.
And then from Lisse, it comes down to Leiden.
Yeah.
And now, so each little town has its own little fair. And it's usually like, it's weird. It's like the same... people turn up in the fair each year, the same rides, they're in the same place.
Yeah,
I've been in Lisse for 20 years and it's the same setup.
Yeah.
Like, there's sometimes like the stuff same, but there's like certain things are in their traditional spot. Mm-hmm. And they go, and in Lisse, weirdly, it happens like Monday to Thursday. Okay. So they don't even do it on a weekend. So the fair arrives on a Sunday and builds up. And then the fair's open Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And then Thursday's the last night.
But is it?
Or it opens on Tuesday, sorry. It's like 3 days.
But it's that every year?
Every year.
Okay. Yeah, because in Leiden, it's connected to the date at least.
Yeah. But in Hillegom, it's always a weekend.
Ah,
I think in Voorhout, it's always a weekend.
Mm-hmm.
In Sassenheim, it's during the week too, because I had to. Got stuck. And in Lisse, they do this thing that which I think they do in Sassenheim too, but they do this horse and trap racing.
Oh, yeah.
So they fill a whole street full of sand.
Yeah.
And then everybody lines the street and bets on these horse races for the day.
Ah, there's and a betting level.
So they have fireworks on the opening night.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's relatively quiet. And then they... kind of build up to the Thursday, and the Thursday is the big day.
Yeah.
But the Thursday in Lisse is insanity because everyone's out from like 10 in the morning and they're betting on horse races for the thing. And like, there is literally like just thousands of people drunk out of their skin, staggering around everywhere that you only see like once or twice a year.
Yeah.
But they're all out. And that's their day. And then all of these little towns have their own one.
Mm-hmm.
And then Leiden has it. And it's like all of that comes together. you basically multiply it by about 20.
Yeah. And officially it's the 3rd of October. And you have the 2nd of October, the day before, where it's the pre-party, if you want to call it that. And you have a couple of things. You have the parade on the streets. I think that's the 2nd. I'm really bad at this.
Yeah, the second night is the crazy one here, isn't it?
There's like the night before. Yeah, the second night used to be more part of the lighter people, the local party.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the local people got together and have that party, and the 3rd is more like everybody's invited party.
Yeah.
And the 3rd starts early in the morning with singing. I'm not sure why, but... you have the singing first, and then you get your...
So everybody has to sing?
No, you have to go to the city hall and sing.
Oh.
At 7 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure, yeah. And then you sing the song that I think is called the Reveille, where you sing loud and blah, blah, blah. Most of them are probably still drunk, not even hangover, drunk from the night before. And afterwards, you get in line for the bread and fish. And you have to sign up for that in advance. That was last week in a pouring rain. Mm. And everybody was waiting patiently in line, which was quite impressive.
Yeah.
And then you go to the Waag and you get your fish and your bread.
Okay.
And then you eat it and then you start probably drinking and eating.
But it's, I mean, it's
that's pretty funny that you see now the Cheerios, the Spanish.
the churros, sticks. Yes.
The churros.
which churros
are very Spanish.
Yes.
Probably not now because they come from everywhere. But it's funny that that snack has become quite a popular thing during the carnival.
And especially, like, I think I passed 3 churro wagons on the way through town this morning.
Yeah. I think it's mostly the fact that you can just hold it in your hand and walk.
Churros and bratwurst seems to be the...
Yeah, and
the,
olive oil.
The food wagon of choice this year is churros or bratwurst.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's fun. And then like the Drieoktober, like lots of, there's usually lots of live music on. The bars are quite...
Yeah, it has changed a bit because there was also, argument about having that live music everywhere. And there used to be like boats on the canal and you can stand on it and see bands perform. And I think they canceled that a couple of years ago because it was pretty expensive. Mm. There was always complaints from the canal boats because they couldn't do that run.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if that's really an issue, but it was more, I think they used it more to get compensation. Yeah, that's it. And for most, there are still people that save up money for this.
Oh yeah, I know people who travel into Leiden for it every year.
Yeah,
like they get the Drieoktober is like their festival of the year, and even if they live in Hillegom, it's like
And it's very interesting because it's not that different from any other town. It's an excuse to drink on the streets.
Mm. No, but it's always had a good atmosphere. The only thing is for about the past 5 or 6 years, it's just pissed it down every time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we'll see if the weather holds this year, but
It wouldn't be surprising if it was going to rain on Monday and Tuesday. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
And it's also very weird because for the last past years there's been a Sunday somewhere in this celebration run. And Sunday is still a weird day in the celebration because officially the carnival is not allowed to open or make money. And those people that have the rides are paying a crazy amount of money to be there.
Yeah.
And you can see that on the prices that you have to pay to enter the attractions. But they have to do it to make at least some money.
Mm.
Because now it's Saturday and I don't think they are officially allowed to open today. I think they are officially they're probably ready to go, but I don't think they can open till Monday.
Mm.
So they have Monday and Tuesday to make up all their money.
Yeah. Interesting.
So you have 2 days.
Having worked on a fair...
you were the clown, weren't you?
I've always been a clown, you know that. I worked on a travel and fun fair in the Middle East for about 6 months.
Yeah.
And having worked on the fair, I know all about like how much they have to pay to do it. And so the fair that I worked on was a Welsh fun fair.
Yeah.
And this is essentially like a bunch of families that run most of the fairs in the UK.
Yeah.
So they're all travelers.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of they all know each other. They all kind of follow, and they all have their own spots that they go to every year.
Yeah.
And they do the fairs in the UK out of tradition.
Yeah.
They hardly make any money. Unless it's something big like the Hoppens Fair at Newcastle, where they're basically there and they can make a bit of money on that mm-hmm. weekend. But all of the local fairs and the little travel and stuff that they do, they just do that out of tradition. And then in the winter, they fly off around the world and they'll go to the Philippines or the Middle East or Japan or somewhere like kind of out there. And if they get to the Middle East, then they make an absolute fortune. So to give you, I mean, I did it in, I think, the beginning of 99.
Yeah.
And when we went to like Oman, obviously you pay we were there for a festival. Mm-hmm. So there was like a big ground that we could put on. And then he made a deal for us to have a kind of setup in a local town as well.
Yeah.
So we were like in the city center, the town center. It certainly wasn't a city. Yeah. So that was a bit more like 3 October where, you know, you're in the middle of the town.
Yeah.
Luckily I was stationed on that ground and not the waste ground as we called it. Cause when you close there, there's nothing to do. Like literally nothing to do. When we closed, there was a town around us so we could go and like get a drink or whatever. But when we went to Dubai, like Dubai, we were there for the 6-week shopping festival.
Okay.
And we were going to be there open for 6 weeks.
Okay.
So 7 days a week, we were open. And the fair was split into two grounds. One was on Al Rigger Road. It was like a big road right through what used to be like the main part of Dubai. Now it's like a forgotten element of it. Dubai's 100 times bigger than it was when I was there, but it was in Al Rigger Road and there was two fairs on that road. And basically there was our fair, UK Fun, and this other fair called Planet Pepsi.
Ooh.
And basically our boss had made a deal and he'd been there before, but he'd made a deal with the chief of police in order to, which basically means like give him a backhander.
Yeah.
In order to get the ground. And when he got there, this time Planet Pepsi were on the ground that he'd booked.
Ah.
And it just turned out that no, they paid more money. You're up the road. Ah. So that upset him.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is he'd paid over £100,000 or £200,000 to ship this special log flume type ride out from Norway or something. It was like a special thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd spent like six figures to get this stuff out.
Yeah.
And they told him he wasn't allowed to put it on the main street.
Ooh.
So then it had to go and join this other fair, which was kind of way out of the and like, and kind of on its own.
Mm-hmm.
And our boss pretty much had a nervous breakdown because he's there waiting to have all of this money come in. And he was basically told, you can't have the ground you want. You're not allowed to put your championship ride on. And he realized that he was being kind of done in from all angles.
Mm-hmm.
So he pretty much had like a nervous breakdown. And then the rest of us were on this place called Global Village, which now, if you look up online, Global Village is this like dramatically gaudy, like Las Vegas style, like shopping experience.
Yeah.
And when we were there, it was a patch of waste ground with like market stalls.
Yeah.
Like it just in the middle of nothing. It was like pretty much a mile walk to this small shopping mall that had Planet Hollywood part of it. And we had to walk literally across waste ground to get to it. And the ground that we were on, there was no electricity, no water, no sanitation at all until it opened at 3 o'clock when they switched the generator on.
Yeah.
So if you were there, like if we had to go there at like 10 in the morning to build up, we couldn't get water. We couldn't get anything until 3 o'clock when the lights went on.
Okay.
And one day we had to go there at 10 in the morning to build up in 42 degree heat. And with the worst hangover I think I've ever had in my life. So a friend had come to visit me and she'd left me a bottle of Jameson's.
Yeah.
And me and my friend Kos drank the entire bottle in one night.
Ah.
And then halfway through the bottle, the boss rang up who didn't really like me that much. And he said, you and Kost and Jeff need to go in tomorrow and you need to fix these three games up. And it was like, oh, okay. And then of course we were hammered anyway. And then I remember getting up in the morning, walking out of the apartment and it's like 10 o'clock. So everyone's asleep because we worked till midnight or 4 a.m, depending on which ground you were on. Mm-hmm. So at 10 a.m, everybody's asleep. And usually if we closed at midnight, we just ran across that waste ground into Planet Hollywood because it was happy hour from 12 till 1. And then we went clubbing after that every night.
Yeah.
So like work hard, party hard. That was the whole thing.
Yeah.
So we'd been out clubbing. We got back to the house. We drank a bottle of whiskey, mm-hmm. gone to bed. I got up at like 10 o'clock, knocked on Cost's door. I was like, come on, we got to go to work. He's just like groaned at me. I walked out of the apartment, in the elevator, downstairs, into the lobby of the apartment, and there wasn't a person around. And usually there's someone on the desk or something like that.
Yeah.
Looked outside and the entire outside was kind of waving. You know, like when you get that like heat look.
Yeah, the entire
world was looked like that. And there wasn't a person or a car or anything, right? And I thought, oh, this is weird. The automatic doors opened and the heat hit me. And the first thing that came to my head, I was like, oh, that's it. The bomb's gone. Like I thought the bomb had dropped. The heat was insane. And then I kind of got outside and waited. Jeff came down. He was hungover. Cost came down. I don't even know how he even got himself out of bed. He just looked like he was dead. We climbed in the back of a taxi, got driven up to Global Village. We got out and of course we were all dying, but we had to do like really physical kind of manual work and rebuild and take one game apart, put a new one up. But we had to do that in 42 degree heat inside a polythene tent surrounded by cuddly toys with really hot halogen lights on us.
Nice.
So we got there, we tried to do so. We couldn't move without sweating. So we just got there and went, oh, fuck this. Mm. Knocked everything off and lay on the floor in what was like the coldest part that we could get, like in the shadow, and literally lay there till 3 o'clock. Now we opened at 4.
Yeah.
I think we lay there till like 2:30 and the shopping mall opened. It was either at 3 or 2 o'clock, but the shopping mall opened a little bit before the ground that we were on worked. So we waited until we knew that shopping mall was opening, got up, staggered across this wasteland, bought like 6 massive bottles of water, drank those, walked back, fixed the game up in like 20 minutes, did all the work in like 20 minutes, and then opened the fair and started work, and then worked through till midnight, and which was a fucking long day. And then went to Planet Hollywood and went out again that night.
Yeah.
It was chaos. But every time I see the fair arrive in Lissa or like coming into day like that, there's 2 things happen to me. One, the first thing I have this like line comes into my head, and it's from one of my favorite books, and I read it almost every year because of this.
Yeah.
But it's Something Wicked This Way Comes by Ray Bradbury. And there's a section, it's all about this dark carnival coming to town. But there's a section in there where like this guy's talk was like, beware the autumn people. And it's like, and then it says they're like these shifty strangers. It's a beautiful little passage. But every time I see the fair come up, the first thing goes like, beware the autumn people. And then the second thing is it just reminds me of building up the fair.
Yeah.
And I always get a little smile out of it. Mm-hmm. As much as I would never go back on it and I would never want to go through that intense thing again.
Yeah.
I'm really glad I did it. And as much as it was hard and it was quite stressful and intense, I'm really, really glad I did it. And I had a lot of fun doing it too. Mm. But I used to always get a buzz when you turn the lights on at night and the fair just lights up and it's like, oh, and I still get a little buzz from it. But when I walk around and I kind of like, yeah, I used to work on that game. I used to go that game and that one. Yeah. But so my relationship with fairs has completely changed. But I still get, there's still a buzz about when the fair lights up.
Yeah, no, and for me, I have a different experience, but it's still interesting to see the city change a bit.
Mm.
For me, you walk towards the station, you have to pass a bit of the carnival, getting ready, putting the vans up in the most crazy spots ever. And you see all the things not working yet. But you know it's going to make noise and lights and crazy stuff. And you know these streets will be packed with people
in a day. And it's...
Yeah. But the scale...
It brings a weird tension in the streets.
Yeah, and the scale of it in Leiden is impressive. So yeah. The local fairs, it's like a marketplace will be full, or one street or two. But in Leiden, Leiden becomes a theme park.
The city center just closed down.
Yeah, but it's a huge fair. It's not... It's like even big. I've seen Amsterdam's fair, and it's, I mean, like 3 October is twice the size of that. It takes up pretty much half the center.
Yeah.
It's huge. And it really does. It's like the whole city becomes a theme park for a few days.
Yeah. And everybody, there's no escaping it because most of the other stuff closes down.
Yeah.
Because the people who have a shop closed down, or if they sell stuff, they start selling stuff. The city council just closes down. If you need a password around those days, forget it. Yeah. It's not going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a strange and fun time of the year, but it completely changes Leiden's character.
Yeah.
Like the walking around Leiden on the 1st of September. Mm-hmm. And walking around Leiden on the 1st of October are two completely different cities.
Yeah. No, and like we were telling each other in the front, it's also interesting to see how it affects the people. Like you have in Leiden, you have the 3 October, and in Amsterdam, you have the Queen's Day. I think the intensity is comparable.
Yes.
And also the fact that everybody goes crazy for no apparent reason.
Yeah.
Because there's nobody around who was there in 14, whatever.
No. No, but it's also, it's the level of drunkenness that's interesting.
Yeah.
Because it's not like, I mean, you can go into any bar and people get drunk on a weekend or whatever, but like, but the scale of debauchery, it's quite, and I just like, people get drunk to the point that, like, they're really not themselves anymore. No. And I wonder if it's because they don't drink throughout the year, or they don't, you know, but it's like they go at it. Yes. And you see people in like some state.
Yeah.
It's like bizarre.
There are people that probably drink a beer or two normally and have go crazy in 2 days. And drink so much that they're not even able to find their bike again or find the way home again.
Yeah. and then what is also impressive is like on the nights, there's plastic everywhere. The place is a mess. But then by the next day, it's gone.
Yeah.
It's like it's clear. The cleanup operation is always impressive.
Yeah, it's very impressive. And it got a lot less plasticky because of the actions that the city council took to reduce the amount of plastic, at least the type of plastic.
Yeah.
Because it used to be crazy, crazy stuff. And now it's still a crazy amount of stuff on the streets. I'm curious if it's because you used to also see a lot of tins. And now you have the tax on the tins in Holland. So I'm quite impressive to see if you see groups of people picking up the tins at the end of the night.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised.
I wouldn't be surprised because you can say a lot about Dutch people, but they like to...
If they get money back, they will be there.
If there's a chance to make money, Dutch people will appear.
Yeah. I don't like getting robbed. I think we've spoken on here before about like kind of village carnivals and things. And in the UK, when I was a kid, we always had the carnival in the summer.
Yeah.
And the summer was like, summer carnival was always, it was always great because it was the whole village would take part in it.
Yeah.
And there'd be a parade through the middle of the village. Usually like with a series of like kind of costumes that would not be allowed today. It's the only way I can describe it. I've got pictures of like my dad and like all the guys from the pub and stuff. Like there's one picture where we're all dressed as Zulus and kind of blacked up.
Yeah.
There's one where we're all on a chain gang. And there's all these, and it's like every year they like picked a theme and did it, but that theme is always some kind of weird. There's a weird kind of hint of racism in the back of it that you can't avoid. And I'm like,
and in that period of time, it was the most it was the most amazing thing ever, and it was, you could laugh about it for months.
Oh, there was like, it made people's, yeah, like, yeah. I remember my mum spent like 3 weeks making this fur African shield for me.
Mm-hmm.
And the pictures are great, but like, I don't think, or I'd like to think that for like, there wasn't any mal, because the other thing is, there weren't any black people
in the
village.
No,
there weren't any people of color. Like, I can remember, so like my best friend is of Indian descent.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember them arriving in the village when I think I was about 11.
Yeah.
And I remember like a friend at the time running up to me and telling me that an Indian family is going to take over the shop. And we were all like, wow, what does this mean? Like, yeah. it was really, I mean, we were so kind of isolated and just not worldly wise in any way in that, yeah, in that region.
But it was probably not, there was probably no hint of racism in your mind. It was probably curiosity. What's gonna happen?
I mean, we got to also remember, like, at that point in the early 80s, you still had like comedians on TV doing blackface. And
yeah.
So, like, I mean, it was just, I'm not trying to kind of make light of it or to say that it wasn't a bit right, because it obviously is.
Yeah.
But like, the pictures are quite startling to look at, like from this.
Yeah, battle. You know what?
But as a kid, it was just like, yeah, we're getting dressed up. Like, I didn't, like, wouldn't have minded if I was a dragon, you know, or whatever. It's just the idea of getting dressed up. But it was always fun to have like the whole village, and we would take over like the, so we would make our own little fair.
Mm-hmm.
So you would have sideshow stalls and things like that, but it would be a coconut shy that one of the guys from the village just hammered some poles into the ground, bought some coconuts and put them on some sticks, and people threw balls at it.
Yeah.
There was another guy who used to turn up and put like a paddling pool down, and then you would try and hit like little golf balls into it. And if you landed in, you would win a prize.
Yeah.
My friend, Andy, his mum used to put a little tent up and dress up as a fortune teller. And of course, everyone knew it was Yolanda, but she was like Madam, I can't remember the name she used to. She had a really funny name that she used to go by, but she would read palms and tell your fortune. But it was all people that you knew. It was just everybody doing this stuff, but everybody got involved with it. There'd be a big parade through the town. There'd usually be a big football match on the Battery, or the big green that we were talking about. Yeah. Interestingly, we never did that on the football pitch. So there was a football pitch in the school ground, but there was always like a men versus women football match that always just took place on the Battery on a piece of open ground with like jumpers for goalposts. Even though there was a proper pitch down the road, that never happened. But that football pitch would be all of the women and some of the young lads, like the boys from the village, taking on the men.
Yeah.
And then there'd be eggs thrown at each other and like beer flying everywhere. And it was just crazy.
I think that probably answers your question why it wasn't on the football pitch.
Yes. and then the end of the carnival was like, everyone would like, the parade would go up, everyone go up to the pub, and then there'd be a do on, as well as like a party on, a do.
Yeah.
There'd be a do on at the club, and the club was at the top end of the village, the Sunny Dean Lodge, and there'd be like a disco on there at night. Now, everyone had been drinking all day.
Yeah.
Then you go up to the club, everyone's still dressed up. Everyone's been out all day. Usually lots of arguments, bit of fighting, lots of people throwing up.
Yeah.
Absolutely fantastic. Loved it. One of the best nights of the year, every year. It was brilliant.
Yeah.
And then now I know people are still living the village, and they haven't had a carnival in over 20 years. It just ended. It kind of ran out.
Yeah.
But I think that group, that generation, that, I mean, it was a proper DIY thing.
Yeah.
There wasn't like a fair came to town or this, that, it was just like the village did it.
Yeah.
And then over time, like, people grew out of it or this, or it got a bit. And once the club closed down, then there was nowhere to have the end part. So you could end up at the pub, but it just, it's kind of dissipated out. And from what I hear from back home, all of that kind of stuff is still set, like is still kind of gone apart from. So the ones where the fair does come to town.
Yeah.
So you'll have Stanhope Shore, and Stanhope is a little village up in the Dales, and they have a fair come every year. Ah. And Walsingham is a little bit further down the valley, and they have a fair come every year. And those two are still going.
Yeah.
But all the other village stuff has kind of fallen apart. But they used to be, insane. And the, that disco every year, like there'd be whatever the chart stuff was at the time would be most of it. And then as it got towards the end of the night, there'd be like 10 minutes of rock music, which is usually like AC/DC, like Whole Lotta Rosie or something.
Yeah.
And one or two others. And there'd be like, I remember the Turnbulls and a couple of other families would be sitting waiting all night and just sit at the table and drinking this. And then suddenly AC/DC come on and they'd be up and they'd be headbanging for 10 minutes and then that would stop.
Yeah.
And then it went into the kind of end of night songs, one of which was Come On Eileen by Dexys, always a classic. And then it, you would have like the slow songs.
Yeah.
For like after the rock stuff, you have the slow songs. And they'd usually seek into that with like REO Speedwagon or Journey or something like that. But just something that like people can get up and just hold each other and,
and
kiss. And then it would be like Come On Eileen, or it would be New York, New York. And it's usually one of those would end the night. And like every year, every single year, it was like the same ritual. And then you'd walk off down this. But like you'd have like the whole village up for the day, and then at night the 300 who could stand would be packing out the club.
Yeah.
And I mean, you call it a club, it's nothing like a club that any of you have in your head.
No.
It's a bar with a function room at the back.
Yeah. I don't think that's a part of the whole fair thing in Holland.
No.
I think the most traditional thing for a fair is being introduced to gambling.
Yes.
At a very young age, you give them money, they give you a very cheap plush thing. And the other thing is standing really tough at a go-kart ring.
Yeah. Yeah. And the dodger.
With your friends.
What I am impressed to see, and it's still there, is like if there's a waltzer, or if they're like, there's still that thing that like every traveling fair order is like, if you work on the waltzer, you don't look cool until you are standing on the waltzer spinning girls around.
Yeah.
Like that thing of like young men, like on any other ride, they just stand at the side looking bored.
Yeah.
Right. If it's the Dodgems or anything like that, doesn't matter. They just stand there looking bored, uninterested. If you work on the waltzer, you have got the coolest fucking job on the planet, because all you have to do is stand on that waltzer and you go round and round and you kind of stand there as if you tried to look cool.
Yeah.
And then girls will come on and you get to spin them round, and I'm guaranteed you, like I guarantee those lads are sleeping with four or five girls a weekend. Like it's honestly, and even when we were on the fair in Dubai, like top dog gets the waltzer.
Yeah.
Like top lads, like, no, he's got that. It's like, oh, bastard. Like, when you're young and horny, working on a waltzer is, it's insane how it works. And there's me stood in a bloody, the first game I had it in Oman, it had like proper like Black Widow catapults that you had to shoot little ping pong balls.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, the golf balls with holes in. So you were like ping pong balls or these golf balls with holes in, and you had to try and catapult a thing and knock a little duck off a shelf to win. Yeah. Well, of course, those balls don't fly straight.
No.
So people got annoyed, which meant the people got annoyed, which meant they put rocks in there and fired rocks at me. So I ended up with like a white welt on the side of my eye one day. And then I just walked up to the boss and went, I'm not fucking working that game anymore. It's too dangerous. And he was just laughing at me. I had this like proper welt on the side of my head. So we changed the game round.
Yeah.
And then it was spill the milk. So it's like a little round table and you have three like heavy milk bottles.
Yeah.
And you have to knock all three of them out of the table. And then suddenly, like, I started taking more money, Because I think he really didn't like me at that point. and he really didn't like me by the end of it. But he gave me the game Spill the Milk. And when we got to Dubai, he gave me Spill the Milk again. And then I was a top game. So as much as he didn't like me, and he wanted to, like, everyone, if he wanted to punish somebody, like, he made you do the ring toss, which is the hardest one to earn. So it's like the big round, all the green bottles in, and it's just chaos. Yeah. Like, trying to look after that is chaos. So whoever was in trouble was on the ring toss. And he wanted to put me on there because I asked for a day off because I had a girl come out and visit me for a few days. And I asked for one day off. And then he said, right, he said, you can have the day off, but you have to do the ring toss. And then the boss of the ground that I was on ran up and said, Billy, he's got top game. And he was like, well, he was like, no, he said, don't get it. He's got top game. And he went, really? So he came up and watched me. And it, like, so we're talking about how much money they were paying, like I say, a decent site fee to be there.
Yeah.
But my, and you're talking like 90 people on this fair, right? So 90 people working on it. That's not including the travelers, and there's like 90 of them too.
Yeah.
So, because the travelers kept themselves to themselves, they wouldn't, like, we were the staff. Like, we were, like, the travelers went out, and three or four of them would be friendly with everybody else, but the rest of them didn't want anything to do with us. Like, you're just workers. And the travelers looked after each other. So we've got, I think in Dubai, our fair had 24. On this one ground, we had 24 games.
Yeah.
And let's say 8 or 9 rides. My game alone was, and it was like 2 coins to play.
Yeah.
And each coin was, we used to call it 5 County Durhams because, like, County Durham's where we're from, and the money in Dubai was Durham. So it was like 5 County Durhams. So it was like 10, works out about £2 at the time.
Yeah.
£2 a go. My fare alone each night was taking over £10,000. So, and I was like easily the best performing one on the ground. But the rest of them weren't far behind. There'd be like 1 or 2 games that weren't doing very well. So we just swapped them around and put something else in and see what worked.
Yeah.
But the least I took in a night was £10,000 a night. And we were open for 6 weeks, 7 days a week.
Crazy.
And I was paid £200 a week, cash in hand.
Yeah.
Great. Because you couldn't spend it. Because you're working every day. And then when you'd go out, you'd go out. I mean, we tried to spend it. And we partied every night. But like, I mean, he, as much as he had a nervous breakdown when he went there, I think they went home and made like 3 or 4 million in the space of 6 weeks.
Oh yeah.
And then they're done. So if they do their tour in the year and do like the Philippines or Singapore was another one they got good at. So Singapore and the Middle East, I mean, they're making millions each year.
Yeah, but they also need to compensate for the rest of the year and everybody else involved.
Yeah.
And the permits and all the other crap and making sure that the stuff actually arrives there. No, but
that's profit.
Yeah, okay, but still.
Yeah. But I mean, Dubai was hilarious because it basically, I'm not sure I should say this kind of thing, but whoever pays the most gets treated the best.
Yeah.
And we stood out like a sore thumb out there. I mean, we were all in blue granddad shorts, bright yellow t-shirts with UK Fun written on. And we went out dressed like that
en masse
every night.
Oh.
So some nights we would go and get changed.
Yeah.
Nah. Most of the time, no. We were out in uniform.
Yeah.
So if one of us got into trouble, everybody knew where we came from.
Everybody knew who it was.
Yeah.
Oh.
I
have a question for you.
Uh-huh.
Because you are the inside person for the fairs. How rigged are the games?
You can win every single game.
But
you can make it harder.
Yeah.
And there are certain things like... when we first started on the fair, the first day after build up, everybody plays the games.
Yeah.
Until you find out who's good at what. So the one of like the milk jugs, there's a knack to that.
Yeah.
And if you're good at it, you can do it, whatever. I got spill the milk because I could do that really easily. My mate Andy was on the rope ladder because he could climb up. The ring toss is the one that's just pure luck.
Yeah.
So which it's chaos, but everything else, you can win it. You can win every single thing. And a lot of the stuff that people think is dodgy isn't. So like, you know, the ones where you have to shoot the fingers off and it's like one of them will be a dodgy bullet. It isn't.
Yeah.
Like the only thing is it's really easy to make those things more difficult. So spill the milk, for example, I'm going to give a hint away.
Ooh.
So you put two milk bottles on the bottom and one on the top. If you line the two on the bottom square with each other, it's easy to win.
Yeah.
If you move one of them, even like a few millimeters back, it makes it twice as hard. So depending on how the game is going, you'll set them all up square. As soon as somebody starts winning something, then you just move it a little bit. But I mean, you're talking fractions.
Yeah.
You move it a little bit and then suddenly it becomes harder. But you would have, like, we would have a thing where you could win up to 8 times a night. And your prize would change over time.
Yeah.
So you would get a little toy and then you get a bigger toy and a bigger, and eventually you'd end up with like a giant Winnie the Pooh or something.
Yeah.
And you could win a maximum of 8 per day. But I could make you win the first two within 4 rounds, but the last 5 I could make you spend 60 tokens to get that. Because you already know you can win it. You already know you can win it. And then you go, okay, I'm going to change table now. Okay, change table. Bang, bam, bam, bang. And I'd like regulars that would come back every single day in Dubai. And there was this young lad, actually, he could have only been in his early to mid 20s, I think. And he came every single night for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And he went home with up to 8 prizes every day. So, of course, he built up to get the big one the first night and he won 3 or 4 of them. And then he was like, I've got enough of them now. And then he started getting like a mix of things. So I would let him have 1 medium and 4 small or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But he, like every night for 6 weeks, he came back and him and his brother... And they spent at least like £200 a night in order to win a cuddly toy.
Yeah.
And then when it was the last night of the fair, or the second to last night of the fair, he said to me, he said, you have made lots of money from me. I said, I've made nothing. And he went, what? He said, but you own this. I said, no. I said, I just work here, the boss. And he couldn't believe that. He thought like, I was taking all the money.
Yeah.
I said, why do you think we have to get tokens? If it was money, I would keep it. But then I said, and he said, you've made lots of money from me. And I said, that's true. I said, but I didn't get any of it. I said, but answer me this. I said, you're a grown man. What do you need 6 weeks worth of Winnie the Poohs for?
Yeah.
And he went, tomorrow I will show you. Tomorrow I will show you what I have won from you. Said, okay. So he came down the next day and he came around. He said, can you come with me? I was okay. And he said, I have something to show you. So I got off out of the game, walked off round to this like car park.
Yeah.
And he's there with 3 friends in like massive like SUVs. Opened the back of all SUVs and there was just like an army of cuddly toys, like Winnie the Poohs and tigers and whatever else he'd won.
Yeah.
And he went, this is what I've won from you. I went, that's brilliant, mate. But what are you going to do with them? Because what was interesting, you could see on the souk in the market, you would see the toys from the fair suddenly sale the next day.
Yeah.
And I was like, what are you going to do with them? And he said, they're not for me. He said, my brother, he works at hospital. We give them all to the children. I went, well, then come with me. So I went round and like, Billy, you don't know this, but I gave a whole box of cuddly toys. I went, there you go. You can have them. It was the last night, sod it. And off you go. But yeah, because I was like, what the hell does a 20-odd-year-old man want with giant Winnie the Pooh toys?
Yeah.
Like a whole army of them. He won hundreds, but you know, cost him a fortune. But yeah, didn't matter.
Yeah, he had his fun with it.
But the other thing that really sticks in my head with all the, when I see all the cuddly toys up is I nearly died from cuddly toys.
You died from cuddly toys.
I nearly died from cuddly toys. I had to restock a game, and the toys that were up, he wanted to change them and put a different toy up.
Yeah.
And I think it was whatever we'd had up before Winnie the Pooh, because suddenly Winnie the Pooh was getting popular, so he wanted all the Winnie the Poohs up. Mm-hmm. But the Winnie the Poohs were at the back of this container. So it's like a big shipping container.
Yeah.
Right. In order to get to the Winnie the Poohs, I had to climb over a giant pile of 6-foot Bugs Bunnies. Right?
Yeah.
And whatever else was at the front.
Yeah.
So literally there's a shipping container just full of cuddly toys.
Yeah.
Right? There's nothing else in it. And they're all loose. They're not in boxes. They're just loose.
Yeah.
So I had to climb onto this pile of cuddly toys.
Yeah.
And kind of like army commando my way across all of these Bugs Bunnies, right? Yeah. To get to the Winnie the Poohs at the back. And at some point halfway through, like they all gave way and I fell face first into like a handstand position, right? And I wasn't at the floor. I didn't make it to the floor. I was stuck in a pile of Bugs Bunnies upside down with all of these Bugs Bunnies just staring at me.
Wow.
And I had to shout for someone to come and rescue me because I was stuck upside down and I couldn't move. And of course everyone was laughing, but I was there for a good like 15, 20 minutes upside down, staring at Bugs Bunny's face, thinking, I'm going to die in here because I'm in a shipping container. It's about 60 degrees. Like if they don't get to me quick, because I literally couldn't move. No. I was trapped. But it was like one of the most intense and terrifying experiences of my life. But they got to me. We unpacked it. We got the Winnie the Poohs out and everything was good from there. But it was I literally thought I was going to die staring at Bugs Bunny's face.
Died by Winnie, by Bugs Bunny.
By Bugs Bunny, yes.
Bugs Bunny killed a guy.
Yeah. Oh man, there's so many stories from that. That fair. It was insane. So beware the autumn people.
Yes. And containers with Bugs Bunnies.
Yeah.
So
I think I'll have to... I'm going to look up the Beware the Autumn People quote. Because...
Yeah, if you find it, we can close off with that.
Yeah. We might edit this bit a little.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, the interesting part now is are you going to go to the fair?
The only thing is I need my glasses.
You need your glasses.
Yeah.
Yeah, but nobody will see that.
I can't read shit if I don't have my glasses.
Oh.
Getting old.
Yeah. I think you are old, not getting old.
Hey,
I'm not that much younger.
I know, but don't don't be too happy about it.
Oh,
you'll catch up.
Okay, here we go.
All right, so we're going to end with this.
Yes,
totally unrehearsed too. Beware the autumn people, for some autumn comes early, stays late through life. For these beings, fall is the ever-normal season, the only weather there be no choice beyond. Where do they come from? The dust. Where do they go? The grave. Does blood stir in their veins? No, the night wind. What ticks in their head? The worm. What speaks from their mouth? The toad. What sees from their eyes? The snake. What hears with their ear? The abyss between the stars. They sift the human storm for souls, eat flesh of reason, fill tombs with sinners. They frenzy forth. In gusts they beetles scurry, creep, thread, filter, motion, make all moons sullen, and surely cloud all clear-run waters. The spider web hears them, trembles, breaks. Such are the autumn people. Beware of them.